You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Julie Burstein, sitting in on this August afternoon for Leonard Lopate. Imagine that you're looking through a kaleidoscope. You know, the kind you had as a kid with the colored bits of glass that create awesome patterns when you peer through a tiny hole into a small cylinder lined with mirrors. Imagine now that one of those fractured, brilliantly colored patterns is repeated over and over on a quilt made up of tiny slivers of brilliantly colored fabric, each repetition slightly different from the next. Now you have a bit of an idea of the intricate, exuberant quilts made by Paula Nadelstern that are on view right now at the American Folk Art Museum. She uses traditional quilt techniques to create complex kaleidoscopic designs, and you can see a slideshow of some of these quilts on our website at WNYC.org. The show is on view until September 13th, and I'm pleased to welcome Paula Nadelstern to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's really an honor because most of the quilts that are in the exhibit I've made listening to WNYC.
Now, none of the quilts in the exhibit, some of the quilts you tell the story in the book that goes along with it. I didn't read any story about public radio. Perhaps that's in a different book.
It is in a different book. A previous quilt that is actually one of the very few that I've ever sold is called Public Radio Days, D-A-Z-E, and is about kind of that experience of listening to this, you know, wonderful, constant, intelligent stuff with bright colors like peeping in every so often, the bright humor that goes on.
Oh, how fun. You say it's one of the only ones you've ever sold. Why is that?
I had this dream that one day I might have an exhibition in New York City and a museum. And so I thought it would be easier if I kept my work together as a body of work. And so I've had my dream come true, having this exhibition at the American Folk Art Museum. Also, there's a large group of quilters in the United States alone. There are 20 million quilters in the United States. And there are also a lot of quilters in Australia, New Zealand, Japan, all these places I'm mentioning I've actually traveled to teach. And so my work is very labor-intensive, and it's almost better for me. I don't want to simplify it. I've never wanted to do that. And so I can almost make more money going around teaching the technique and working on these labor-intensive quilts when I get home and exhibiting them and showing them when I'm home. So up until this point, I've sold very few quilts.
That's interesting, in the way that you sustain yourself is through the teaching.
Yes, there are 20 million quilters, and they all need a teacher once a month, all these guilds, these quilt guilds. So there are occasions when I go someplace like Rochester, and there are occasions when I go someplace like New Zealand.
It's a subculture I had no idea about.
Yeah, it's a huge subculture, and some of the quilters are listening to you right now, I know.
What drew you to quilting?
I was basically a hippie in the 60s, and I tried every variety of craft. I did macrame. I did needlepoint. I did everything. I did pottery, and I just kept coming back to quilts because I loved the fabric. I was constantly drawn to the fabric. I always say when it comes to fabric, more is more. And I made my very first quilt in 1968 in my college dorm, ripping up my clothes into 10-inch squares and calling them a quilt.
You made it out of your own clothes.
Yeah, I just ripped them up. And then I didn't really make a quilt because a quilt is really three layers, and it's important. Like, that's the basic that we've inherited from our founding mothers. And I didn't make that. I made really what would be now called a duvet cover. I just stuffed that old quilt inside of a comforter cover, but I called it a quilt. I didn't do that, the little very important quilt stitch that holds the three layers together.
So what are those three layers for those of us who have seen quilts but may not know the exact terminology?
There are the three layers. It's a sandwich. The top is whatever the quilter chooses to do. It could be applique work. It could be patchwork, which means piece together, like seam together. It could be whole cloth with embellishment on top. And so that's the top of the quilt. Then there's a batting, which, you know, the pioneer women had to stuff leaves and that sort of thing inside. But we now have batting that is so fine and that no threads come through, no beading, which is when the batting comes through with your stitches. And, you know, it's just we have so many different batting companies trying to get our attention to use their different kinds of battings. And then a backing. And the backing is whatever you want it to be. I always put a very beautiful piece of whole cloth on the back because I think it's like wrapping up the whole quilt like a present. But the tradition is sometimes to put your leftovers. I would never put my leftovers on the back of the quilt. And then you do a little quilting stitch. These days, many people use a machine to do that. I still do it by hand. And that holds the three layers together.
And do you do most of this by yourself, or do you, I know you were talking about these quilting groups, I'm picturing a whole bunch of women getting together, maybe I saw it in the movies, to do a quilting bee and quilt together.
I have a little bee, but we all work on our own work. There are four of us in New York City who meet together, and sit around and eat Chinese food, but we work on our own work, and then sometimes
we do retreats.
So
you each quilt while you talk.
We quilt while we talk, or we work on whatever, or we go away to a place on the North Fork of Long Island, and we do a retreat, and we just work morning to night, just sewing machines, just roaring. And this is not unusual. So many different people all over the country are doing this. When I'm designing, I'm alone in my two-bedroom apartment in the Bronx, by myself, working on the work. I do all of the steps by myself.
Quilting is, you say you live in the Bronx, and I know you grew up there. Quilting is not something that most people associate with New York City, but is there a quilting tradition in this city?
I think we're starting the quilting tradition in the city. I mean, there's now a lot of quilters in New York. I think a lot of, in the past, 10, 15 years, a lot of people who did home sewing, have kind of, it's so easy to purchase garments at a reasonable price that many people who love fabric have found their way, to quilting. But there's certainly no tradition of quilting in the Bronx. And I don't come out of that tradition. I mean, when I travel, I meet a lot of women who are third, fifth. There's a quilt in my exhibition that's absolutely magnificent from the 1800s, a Quaker quilt that was found in Philadelphia. It happens to be belong to the family. One of the members of my professional guild, we're 18 who have met in New York for over 20 years, it's her fifth grandmother's quilt, coincidentally.
She comes from Philadelphia.
That's right. But I'm first generation American, and no, they basically my quilting background is that you stuffed the goose and brought over the quilt stuffed from on the boat.
With these quilts that are in the museum, they are extraordinary in terms of the tiny pieces that you put together to create these patterns that do look like kaleidoscopes or snowflakes. What was the impetus to focus on this whole idea of these fractured patterns for you?
Well, my first impetus was a beautiful piece of fabric, a fabric that's a classic, more than 100-year-old fabric from Liberty of London, which had the bilateral symmetry that I've kind of made my mantra. Everything I do, the symmetry comes from using this kind of fabric. I even design my own fabric that has this bilateral symmetry.
Bilateral means it's two sides and they are
That's right.
They're like
the human
mirrors.
Body, it's almost as if there's a spine down the middle, some motif that from that point on, equidistant, there's motif to the left, that mirror image is motif to the right. And that is the fabric, the kind of patterning that allows me to get the sense of a kaleidoscope. Basically, a kaleidoscope functions like a circle. And one of the other things that's interesting is that people think I'm very mathematical and that the quilts are very mathematical. And although I did go to the Bronx High School of Science, I was not one of the better students. And I'm not. I mean, I can't give change. I'm just not a good mathematician. But I've kind of learned it as I go along. And the one thing I know to be true is that there are 360 degrees in a circle, and everything I do is based on that. And so I will predetermine how many wedges I want my kaleidoscope to be made up of, 8 or 6 or 10. 16 is what I'm working on these days. And then that divide 360 by that number, and it gives me the angle gives me a triangle. I draft a triangle very accurately. And I'm not that accurate a person. I don't tend to do things accurately. But this I am really careful about, because from that point on, I could work on this triangle for a week or 18 months. And at the end, I'm doing the same. Whatever I do in that triangle once, I do 8 or 16 times. And in the end, when it goes together, I'm not sure exactly sure what it's going to look like to the very end. Just like in a real kaleidoscope, constantly moving, I'd like to be the one who makes the magic and the one who's surprised.
And you like to surprise yourself.
I like to
too.
Be just as surprised. And so I'm looking for relationships between fabrics, between commercial fabrics. I don't make. I am involved in making commercial fabric for the quilt maker now, but I don't paint my own fabric or dye my own fabric the way many quilt makers will. I've lived in this, two-bedroom apartment. I never had access to that kind of space. And I'm a very good shopper. So I actually, will buy fabrics wherever I am, and I use all these fabrics. I don't think of my work as being so much about these little pieces. I'm so surprised, I understand that they are, but to me that's just what allows me to give it a sense of being fluid And that's what I'm trying to do, is create that sense of the kaleidoscope on the flat surface, that fluidity, the sense that it's spontaneous and not contrived, the sense that it's luminous because the kaleidoscope is based on mirror systems.
Well,
and
it
light.
Looks very much like stained glass often.
There's sometimes I'm aiming for that. You know, mm-hmm. I specifically, if I give it leading, if I, you know, a little thin fabric that I use consistently to create a leading, I do that in quite a few quilts. I base that on a kaleidoscope by a kaleidoscope maker from Maine named Sue Rio, and one of her kaleidoscopes is actually in the exhibit, a very beautiful one. So I'm looking in my kaleidoscopes. I have a collection now, and I try to get ideas for how to really make it, you know, seem like that constantly moving, spontaneous, you know, it's controlled chaos, that idea that, you know, and I'm really aware of that, that too much symmetry could actually be boring, and I have to find that mix where the audience will sort of be enthralled by the symmetry.
Well, there's a tradition I know in weaving to weave a mistake into whatever it is you put together, because if it was absolutely perfect, partly I think it's a ritual, but I think partly also it's much less interesting if it's
perfect. That's true, but I think in the quilt tradition, that comes from the idea that only God would be make something mm-hmm. so perfect. So I think, you know, yes. in the Amish quilts, you know, you see that. For me, and especially with the snowflakes, I mean, I'm well aware of the fact that snowflakes are not perfect. It's like Hallmark has led us to believe that snowflakes are perfect.
Yes.
You know, they have a very hard life as they smash around and they come down and as they're developing and crystallizing. And so I'm using the kind of fabric that will give you that sense that some of it's almost melting and some is not. And I'm trying really hard to do that, because I mentioned snowflakes because I did do a book and a couple of quilts in the kaleidoscope series. To me, they're kaleidoscopes, but it's the same technique, but a different design sensibility, because I'm using these fabrics that sit against a very dark blue background in order to make it feel as if there's a foreground and a background, and you know, you're getting the sense of a snowflake. I don't
it
make
feels
red
like
ones.
A snowflake at yeah. night in some sort of bright light.
Right. Well, I don't make red ones or pink ones or yellow ones. When I'm doing kaleidoscope, I'll use any color in the whole world. I mean, I want to throw in that chaos and that sense of surprise. But snowflakes, to me, have to be icy, and I don't want to, you know, I want you to really identify, see it and say snowflake. I've actually studied the snowflake shapes of W.A. Bentley, who was
yes.
the snowflake man, and he did, you know, over 6,000 snowflakes and left us that legacy. So I'm really looking, when I did that, I looked at that very much, the shapes of the snowflakes.
There's a quilt in the exhibition and in the book and on the WNYC, the Leonard LoPate website, that has a story behind it, and I found it very powerful to look at the quilt. It's a quilt about tulips. Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind that quilt, which has kaleidoscope shapes in it, but then there's sort of a profusion of yellow tulips at the top?
I actually, the Manhattan Quilters Guild, which is my wonderful professional guilds, the people who juice me up and keep me going, we for 4 or 5 years, we did a traveling show, and we came up with a theme that and had to each make 36-inch quilts. And I made one quilt that turned out to be 37 inches, and quickly had to make another one for this exhibition.
You the couldn't just was, cut the
I
inches.
Was not. It took me so long to get those extra 37. It was a very spiral. It's actually on the cover of my book. It was a difficult quilt. And the theme was Yardworks, and my sense was first, that it was okay for me to make a kaleidoscope.
And yardworks means
anything to anybody.
But it also means 36 inches and the bolt of cloth.
But it also means for me that I could originally do a kaleidoscope image, because that's where I play, in my yard, in my kaleidoscope. Mm-hmm. And it also was, I live on the 9th floor, and when I look down the trees in early May, I can see little bits of tulips like coming through on the communal, you know, garden. And I'm peeking down on these trees that are growing up. And my father was dying, essentially, and it was a very sad time. And I was just drinking my coffee, staring out my window, and just, you know, my mind on what we were going to do that day at the hospital. And I saw this bits of color, and part of my brain is trying to stay with the sadness of today, and the other part just has to follow off and go, what is that color? And so the quilt is called Tulips in the Courtyard Below, and you do see the little bits of colored tulips peeking up through the greenery. And that became the quilt for that exhibition.
Do you find that many of your quilts take root in a kind of experience of what's happening in your life at that moment?
Combinations of that. You know, sometimes it's completely a fabric, which is something that took place in my life. I mean, the moment I see, you know, some wonderful fabric, that could be, I mean, that's a that's a, you know, a terrific moment, something, you know, that wow, that idea that just sort of pops in. But yes, and sometimes I did a quilt that sort of commemorated some sadness in the family's life. I mean, they're always kaleidoscopic to me, but I think to the audience sometimes they get less and less, as if they look like kaleidoscopes. But I'm always working in that same triangular shape and then multiplying it in some way, and I'm just taking one idea and stretching it.
Each of these circles can have how many pieces in them?
You know, I really never counted.
That's probably a good thing.
I mean, but the idea would be that if one triangle has 50, you multiply that by 8 or 16. You know, because it's not the point for me. It's, you know, you have to just answer that question and see where it takes you. And so I'm constantly, and also since a kaleidoscope is all about abundance, and I mean, I need that kind of intricacy and detail, and in order to give that sense of a kaleidoscope, I sometimes get it through beautiful fabrics that have the intricacy, and then maybe I only need 10 pieces of fabric, but sometimes I have to provide 50 in order to create that.
How do you have the patience to put all of these tiny pieces together? That was the thing that I looked at and I thought, wow, I don't know whether I could ever do this.
Well, I don't think I could interview people. I knew you were going to ask that question because it's just the question that everybody asks. It's like, you have so much patience. And I feel it's a funny question. You know, we don't ask many artists that, but I think we ask women that,
and I think things that are repetitious we ask about that.
You know, and for me it's like it's the process and it's what I must do, and each one of us finds, you know, I'm not a kindergarten teacher. I would wonder how one has the patience to do that. So for me it's not about, you know, that's not the driving force. It's this, there are moments of tedium in it. I'd love to come up with a new word that explains that process where you love to do something and it's tedious and yet you love,
yes,
you know, tedious has such a negative connotation. So I'm always, you know, kind of joking about that.
But there is something too. I'm a potter, and there is something about doing the same thing over and over and over again that can put you in another space. I mean, you talked about listening to public radio.
Right.
I know for me, going into the pottery studio and throwing 15 mugs gets me into a kind of rhythm, and I don't know
rhythm
whether
that sometimes kind of opens me up to new ideas. I mean, I have to get almost into that stage to take it to another step. It's at that point, not when I'm designing, that I almost answer some of the questions, but rather when I'm just, you know, I sew the stuff in, like, I make the decision and then I do it 8 or 16 times. So that part of it doesn't take that long. The process which I've made up is much simpler. And basically I made up this technique because I didn't know how to do it the right way. I didn't know how to sew. I still can only do straight lines. You know, even though the work looks like it's a lot of curved piecing, I actually work, you know, in straight lines. By now I could have learned how to do curved piecing, but instead I do my own technique. Also, sometimes I write a lot about the process because I've written quite a few books. And now I know that if I'm listening to Lenny talk to somebody about creativity, whether it's about the opera or writing a book or whatever, and my mind is kind of open to what they're talking about, I sometimes might get the answer to what I was trying to do, you know, trying to write about three days ago, and I just love that part of it. I've actually, like, let myself listen to the radio at that point when I need to resolve something.
And I think I read somewhere, and I may be getting this wrong, that when our eyes are involved in a task, whether it's close up or particularly far away, our minds are open to ideas in a different way.
Really?
So it's interesting to think about. I'm picturing you at your kitchen table? Is that where you do most of your...
I did work on the kitchen table for 15 years or so or more, but my daughter's 31 years old now, and she has moved away, and I have taken over her room. So I actually do work in one of the rooms. It's not a huge room, but it's mine.
Well, I'm speaking with the quilter and artist Paula Nadelstern, and her quilts, beautiful kaleidoscope quilts, are at the American Folk Art Museum through September 13th. You can see a slideshow of some of her work on our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.